What I'd like to do, our topic for the next few weeks overall, the Shirim, the topic is Nivuot Korban Gevurah, and to take us through large sections at Hashem of Tepe Chedkel, Shayahu, and other Nivim, a little bit Yirmiyahu perhaps, we'll see how much time we have. We're going to try to do as much as we can and cover as much ground as we can in terms of depth, in terms of breadth, but hopefully a little bit of each. But I'd like to start with, for reasons that will hopefully become clear as we go on, is Sefer Yechezkel. That's what I hope to do tonight, Sefer Yechezkel. Okay. In a British version, admitted, but all of Sefer Yechezkel tonight, in a certain sense, you'll see. And particularly, the first parak. It's really more than the first. In fact, it's usually known as the Maaseh Merkabah. Okay. And before I go any further, as soon as I... Yes? Oh, sure, please. Okay. Is it okay if I continue with the introduction?
I think so.
What? Did you go far?
No.
Okay. I'm just going to continue with the introduction, just so we can catch her up. It's not the crux of it, it's not going to be terrible. The first reaction I usually get when I say we're going to do Maaseh Merkabah is, well, we all know the famous mission, the beginning of the second paragraph of Chagiga, that says that you're not allowed to give a shiur on Maaseh Merkabah. And this one says, and Dorshin, but right after Shlosh, the whole of Maaseh Bereshit, the Shine, the Lope Merkabah, the Yachid. If it's the right type of student, you can teach Maaseh Merkabah to one person, not to a shiur. Right? So, how are we doing Maaseh Merkabah? And the answer is that if you open up in the Kral Shalos, you say to yourself, and I'll give you a few examples. You don't have to open up in the Kral Shalos. I just want to show you this for a second. But if you open up for a moment, here's in the Kral Shalos doesn't have so many Mepharshim. There's a few Mepharshim. Okay, I apologize for going on, but you didn't miss anything terrible.
All right. Sorry.
So, if you look, first parak Yechezkel, hey, Rashi, Radak, do this, the handful of Mepharshim, this is parak Aleph, okay? Now, what do you notice about parak Aleph as I flip the pages? Mepharshim have a lot to say, right? They are hardly silent, and as the Rambam points out in Mori Bukhom, right, if you write a Sefer, if you write a Perush, you publish something, it's like giving shiur to thousands of people. Okay, it's not like speaking to one or two people. The point is that it's clear, and I can show you, take a look at Barmanel. Barmanel has many pages on Parakal. I can go through all of you. Take a look here. It goes on and on and on and on. Okay, Malvin, right? One of the greatest diakonim. Yes, Maaseh Merkabah. There's no shortage of things that he has to say about it, right? So clearly, that's not what it means. And if we were to take the time, which we're not going to do, and look at the Rambam and Teresh Mishnayot, and in Hilchot Yisod HaTorah, and in Mor Nevuchim, and we were to look at the Ramban, and we were to look at the Ran in his threshold, and Kule, we'll see that different Rishonim have different understandings. What is Maaseh Merkabah? Hatzad HaShavash Bahem, that they all agree to one thing. What it is. It isn't learning the Peshat in the first part of Yechezkel. That's not what it means, Ein Dorshim, the Merkabah. And it's amazing, I've come across so many Rebbeim who are shocked. They say, like, you know, they have Tanakh faculty meetings, and, say, okay, we'll learn the first part of Yechezkel. You can't do that, you know. And, like, what are you talking about? Anyhow, there's no problem with learning Pshat in the first parak of Yechezkel. In fact, Rashi, in his parak, one example, Rashi, who thinks that it has something to do with the parak Aleph, to quote one pasuk on Pasuk Chazayin, says, "Va'erkein ha'chashmal lo nitan reshut l'konein b'mikrazeh." Okay, you can't be mitzvonein. You can't, like, you know, go into the depth of this pasuk. It's only one pasuk Chazayin, that's based on the Ein Darsh, and his understanding of the Gemara, the Mishnah of the Gemara Chagiga, and then he continues, Bayit La, Milafnim La, Kimarei Eish. Right, he comments on the second half of the Pasuk. right? It tells you what. In other words, in the name of Pasuk that, in other words, there are certain aspects of it that you can't go into, but I'm still going to discuss what the Pshat of the Pasuk is, what the meaning, you know, what the literal meaning is. So, doing that there, we're going to see a certain amount of depth of the Maaseh Merkava in terms of Pshat. And the Pasukim, I think without risking anything in terms of the halacha of okay, so let's do that five moments and let's get started. My understanding of how this is supposed to work is that we're going to do some parts Chavruta and some parts Shir. Yes? Well, that's good. Okay? So, I think that'll be very worthwhile. So I'm going to give you a little bit of marching orders, and then we're going to get a little bit of homework, and then we're going to get started with the Shir. I hope to, as I said, cover a good part of Sefer Yechezkel, tell us a perspective on what the Sefer is about as a whole, how it works, etc. We're going to start with Maaseh Merkava, Perek Aleph. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to just take out a Tanakh, a Mikro Gedolo, the Tanakh, without some parts, whatever you'd like. However you want to do it, you want to use English, you don't want to use English, you want to use whatever mafarshim you'd like, please take the next little while, let's say until 8:15. Sound good? Reasonable? 8:15? To go through and familiarize yourself with Perek Aleph. Okay? And to get as far as you can in terms of just understanding the pshat of what's going on with Perek Aleph. And what ultimately we want to do is to get at what is the basic message, or what are the basic messages, what are the basic images, what are the basic ideas of Perek Aleph, because that's going to be a key to all of Sefer Yechezkel, because Yechezkel constantly refers back to Perek Aleph, constantly refers back to Maaseh Merkava. Okay? Ready to go? Perek Aleph, even if you learned it before, go through it, because we're going to have a lot of fun with Perek Aleph and the rest of Sefer Yechezkel. So please get started. 8:15, we're going to convene and have it. It's going to be an adventure, as you'll see. There's also down here. Yeah. Question is, who is... I want to understand the first part of the Yechezkel. And being that he's an enigmatic and challenging character, so much that it's so cryptic, and obviously we're not going to try to decipher it all tonight, because that's going to be the course of this month. But as soon as the reader's going to look at it, if you want to look for one Mefarish who's going to shed light on the Nevuah Yechezkel, on Perek Aleph of Yechezkel, and Maaseh Merkava, who are we going to look to? Who's the first Mefarish, the most important Mefarish, who's going to shed light on it? Okay. I believe that the best of the answers, although there are many good ones, is of course the Navi Yechezkel. And what I mean by that is that there's a Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah. Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah says the following. There's one second, it's a very, very important Yerushalmi in standard editions. It's in Paragimah Halakha Hey, but there are many different editions of Yerushalmi. The most common one is in Paragimah Halakha Hey, where it says, it's a pasuk that we're all familiar with from Mishlei Laman Aleph, Haita, Kaniyot, Socher, Mimerfak, Saviv, Achma, Devrei Torah, Aniyim, Bin Koman, Vashirim, Bin Makom, Masher. Right, the idea that very often the key to one thing in Torah is found someplace else. Right? You may have, you want to understand what's going on in Parashat Balak, you have to know what it says in Parashat Matzot, you have to know what it says in Micha, otherwise you don't understand what the role of Bill on it. Right? That's a real example, we're not going to answer that because it's not relevant to us, but that's always true. We have to put the pieces together, that's what it's all about. If you want to understand what Yechezkel says in Perek Aleph, most importantly, you have to look at what he says in Perek Yud, in Perek Kaf Aleph, and so on and so forth, Kaf Ches. We'll see many, many pieces, and as we put them together, things will become much, much clearer. And things that at first are so enigmatic, so cryptic. What are these chayot, these strange creatures with the fire and the rainbow and the this and the that? What's going on? What I've done? What's that all about? But once we start putting the pieces together, we'll see that at least the essence of it is pretty straightforward. Before we get to any of that, one other point. There is a trick, if you like, or a methodology, you can call it what you like, that is very useful whenever you have a difficult text. It could be a parish of Tanakh, it could be a parish of whatever it is. It's a very, very simple trick, very simple methodology, but it's very effective, it's very powerful. And it's based on a very simple svara. Has its origins perhaps in the Hakdama, the Akedah Yitzchak, the parish on Shir HaShirim, but Kohelet. We don't need to look at that right now. This is simple stuff. We all understand that if we have an assignment, we have a job, we have something coming up, we're going to give a speech, or we're going to write an article, we're going to write a paper, whatever it is, we know that if you're going to make a speech, or you're going to write an article, the part that you're going to work the most on, that you're going to polish first and last, you're going to really work at, you're going to make sure are perfect, because they're really going to stay with your audience more than anything else, is number one, it's the first thing that you know is going to make the most impression.
Introduction.
Right, the introduction, the beginning. And number two,
conclusion,
the ending. Right, that's the key to everything. And then the body, you know, people drift in and out. But okay, do your best. Therefore, it stands to reason that if a Navi is speaking to Am Yisrael, right, or a Navi or Moshe Ben Hashem, whatever, is speaking to Am Yisrael, or is writing for Am Yisrael, the case may be whatever part of Tanakh we're talking about, whatever the medium is, but the same far holds true, that in any given section, what is necessarily going to contain at least some, if not all, of the major, major points of what's being said overall in that whole section, I see the beginning and the end, right? So is that going to contain the essence of what the whole thing is about? And therefore, if it's difficult to get a handle on 28 psukim, it may be a lot easier to start. And how many people start in Pesach Aleph and went straight through to Chafet? Anyone here began in Aleph and through? I started in Aleph, I went to Chafet, and then I went through the psukim in between. Because when you do that, you get much more of a handle on it. And then you can see how that's borne out. You can check out your assumptions by looking at the rest. Okay? So let's try that for a moment. Let's look at the very beginning and the very end and see what happens. Yes?
Did Chaim write anything else?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I'm sure he did, but I'm saying not that I'm, you know, particularly familiar with. Okay. Vayhi b'shloshim shanah b'arvi'i b'chamishah l'chodesh v'ani b'tocha gola on the har kvar yiftechu ha'shamayim. Bar Am Bar Oz Elohim. Okay, very important for sure. You're going to see on many levels. He describes how he is in the Golah, right? He is in Babel, right? Already this is the beginning of the process of Galut. It was not yet, the Korban hadn't taken place yet, but the exile of Bnei Yisrael took place in stages, and already some Jews have been exiled to Babel, including and Yechezkel amongst them, and he's on Nahar Bar Nitzchu HaShamayim, the heavens open. And he sees Mar'ot Elohim, right? Divine vision. And that's the rest of the parable, the description of those divine visions, of those Mar'ot Elohim. Okay, so the heavens open, Nitzchu HaShemayim, Mar'eh Mar'ot Elohim. Pasuk Chafet. Ki Mar'eh HaKeshet Asher Yeh Ba'anan B'yom HaGeshem, Ki Mar'eh HaNoga Tzadid, Hu Mar'eh Dmut Tzvot Adonai V'Reh V'Kol Panai V'Shma Kol Mizaber. Now, quick question. Anyone recognize this? Nitzchu HaShamayim, beginning, end, Kimare HaKeshet Asher Yeh Ba'anan B'yom HaGeshem. Anyone recognize this? That's how many people saw that when you read through from Aleph to Chafet? What? How many people saw that when you went from Aleph to Chafet? See how useful it is to read the first pasuk and the last pasuk first, right? As soon as we did it, it became very obvious, right? And this is a very important point. This is a major backdrop for what Yechezkel is all about, this image of Noach. In fact, you look through the rest of the Sefer, you look through the rest of the Perek, okay, who can tell me, just from reading Perek Aleph, another thing that fits in with the image of the Mazel? Something from the middle now, someplace, yes?
That, like, there was kind of trauma, everything was
all over. I mean, we were kind of in with the surreal thing that the animals are all over.
Okay, yes, suppose there are animals, right? That's interesting. What else? Yeah.
Well, it seemed as though like it was just like one creature, like one or four creatures like going on, but I feel like now that like it's like you keep it in the context of Noah, because like you knew that in the tarot we were forced, so it's kind of be like everything was just all over the place.
You can all create subtle stuff. It's something very glaring, something like very simple. All you're saying is great, but there's something very basic, yes.
There's fire and lightning.
There's fire and lightning, but there's something even more. It always happens. You get like the more solid it is, the faster they get. Yes.
This is
Sarah. Also, because there's something even more basic. You know, so there's Mayim Rabim. See the Mayim Rabim? Right? Okay, in between, there's the blood from Mayim and the Tamare Akesh, so you have the Yom Anan. Right? There's Mayim Rabim. Right? And this isn't a description of the novel, and think about it for a moment. It makes so much sense. It's so powerful. It's so powerful an image. Why? Because what is Yechezkel addressing? When is Yechezkel live? What is he addressing? What's happening? In one word, what's happening? Take a look. The Chorban, right? The Chorban. He's addressing the Chorban. Yes.
It's like kind of like the same thing that, like, you know, it's something.
If we've gone beyond the point that maybe it's all does the tshuva practice, right? In other words, that's according to Yishayahu, right? But now already it's happening. This is imminent, right? The form is not taking place. But Yechezkel's message is that the Mabul is coming. What's the Mabul? It's the end of the world, right? And think about it. For the Jewish people, the Korban is the end of the world. It's the end of life as they know it, right? For centuries and centuries, we've been in Eretz Yisrael. We've been all together. We've been autonomous. We've had the Beit Hamikdash for over four centuries, and now all of that is coming to an end. There's going to be death. There's going to be destruction. There's going to be exile. There's going to be an end to the Avoda. The world's coming to an end. It's like the Mabul. But also like the Mabul, it's not really the end. Not only is it not really the end, but it really is a destruction that serves what purpose? Paves the way for a rebirth, for a recreation, for a new start. Right? And that's exactly what the Chorban is all about. That's what Yechezkel is telling us. And there is going to be, what does Keshet represent? Right? That the grit with man, the grit with man, that there's not going to be an absolute end. That God has not given up on man even during the Chorban. On the contrary, that anything, it's just a question of clearing away all the problems so that we can have a chance at rebuilding and rebuilding a better world. And that's the silver lining to the message of the Chorban, right? The Merkava is a very scary image because the Merkava represents the Shekhinah departing, right? Moving, it's no longer stable. There are different images for the base, for the Makom Shekhinah throughout Tanakh, right? We have the Mishkan, which is a tent. We have the Beit Hamikdash, which is a house. We have the Merkava, which is not only a chariot, but it's a super mobile one, right? It instantly goes in any direction. Any way, instantly, as soon as there's a thought, it moves in that direction. The Shekhinah is not going to be in one stable location. There's not going to be a Beit Hamikdash. There's not going to be a Makom Shekhinah. But what's the silver lining? The Halel and the Mikdash Ma'at. It's going to be, God's presence is going to be accessible in minor ways all over the place, right? And true is going to go, true is going to be Chorban, true is not going to be Mikdash, but it's also going to be a degree to which the Shekhinah is going to go with us and be accessible, at least to a certain degree, glimpses, flashes, here and there, all over the place. Yeah?
Doesn't it say that pre-Chorban, the Beit Hamikdash, that the Shekhinah was only there?
No, but it is to say that that's where it's centralized. Now what that means, we'll try to discuss when we get to Yishayahu Perek, but we never, okay? We can't do it all in one night. Let's see how much we're going to try to do tonight. Okay, but it's a good question, but we'll try to deal with it in Yishayahu Perek, okay? Which is the other Masa Merkava. That's the parallel Perek in Yishayahu to this one. Obviously, Yishayahu is earlier. This is based on Yishayahu Perek, but let's go a step further. Okay, we just started to warm up. So we have, first of all, the idea of Noah, right? The idea of Noah and the Mabul. The idea that there is this destruction, and it is a tremendous, tremendous magnitude, but it's also a cleansing, it's also a recreation, it's also rebuilding the future. Remember, who is Yechezkel? The Feet, and I know there's some debate about it, but simple reading of Yechezkel is, who is Yechezkel addressing which community? which community? Where is it? Zavot Bavel. In other words, this is where the Jewish community is going to be exiled to. You know, when Yerushalayim is destroyed and everyone is kicked out and then they flee, etc., where are they going to go to primarily? They're going to go to Bavel. And that's where they're going to rebuild for the 70 years until the second base of Midrash. And it turns out to be the honest, but in any case, the point is that that's where they're going to, that's where they're going to rebuild. In other words, where is Noah going to? Right? Where is Noah? Where is the rebuilding? That's Bavel. Yechezkel is paving the way for that, right? Yechezkel is saying to the community of Bavel, there's going to be this tragic and terrible destruction, but be prepared, there's also going to be a day after. There's also going to be a rebuilding, and that's going to be your responsibility. Get ready for it. Okay? And that's to a large degree what Yechezkel's mission is. Okay, so that's one image that lurks in Perek Aleph. Okay, that's a minor image. That's not the major focus. That's not what we're going to really talk about tonight so much. Just a little bit that kind of connects to what we really want to talk about. What I'd like to talk about more is the strange part of Perek. We have these, let's talk about some of the things that we have, some of the major images. We have these chayot, right? Very strange, chayot. And the chayot are surrounded by H, right? There's this H that is happening around the chayot, and what is coming out of the H, remember? Right, Barak, right? And that H, you say Barak. Okay, so there's Barak, there's this light, these sparks coming out of the H. And that all is all around the chayot. What do we have above the chayot? We have a, it's not a visual representation, it's just a list. Here we have Rakia, okay, we're Rakia. We have, what else? Above the Rakia we have a Dmut, an image of Dmut what? Dmut, I didn't hear. Dmut what? Very end of the thing. Oh, we have the Kara, right? Okay, yeah. That's it. But on the top, we have Dmut Adam, right? Dmut Adam. And all of this somehow connects to the idea of, this is one single prospect that I'm going to really get into, and that is, it all connects to the idea of the Dmut Kivod Hashem. Okay? And we have the Chayot, the H, very nice, and all these things which we like the most. What are they? What are they about? What's the message? So, let's not try to guess. Let's not even share notes on all the things we found in the Parsha just yet. Not good at all. But let's leave it for the moment. Let's look, as I said before, the first in the Parsha we have to look at is the Chayot. Let's see what you have to say for himself. The image of the Merkava comes back again and again and again throughout the Sefer. Okay, you know, commonly asked, where's the Mas Merkava? It's called Perek Aleph, right? Very easy, but it's not really true. It's the main and original site is obviously Perek Aleph, but it comes up again and again. It's a thread that runs through the whole Sefer. So, let's take a look, for example, at Perek Yud. Okay, and let's see if Perek Yud helps us at all to understand what's going on. Perek Yud. Okay, you kind of can follow on the sheet, or in your fun sheet or in your Tanakhim or pencil, whatever is convenient. If you have the sheet, it's easier to kind of underline and highlight and do whatever you need to do, take notes. But let's take a look. So in Perek Aleph, we have Mut Hayo Mar Hen Bitzach Lai Eish, Barogu Mar Eyal Hashemim, Kini Kal Nefet Ben Hayo Benogal Eish, and the Eish Yosei Barak, 34. Perek Yud, we read, starting from Pasuk Ketvav, just to give you a condensed version, by Yromo HaKuvim, Tia Chayav Shara Iti Min Ahar Kvar, Uvelechet HaKuvim, Yalku Al Fanim Eshvan, Uvesteit HaKuvim Et Kanfeihem, Lavrumi Al Haret, Lo Yisabu Al Fanim, Gam Hem Eshvan, Ba'amdan ya'amod v'rumam ya'romu v'yaromu atam ki roch ha'chayah v'hem. V'yitzei kvod Adonai me'al mitzran ha'bayit v'yamod al ha'kudem. V'yitzu ha'kudem ha'kampehem v'yaromu min ha'aretz v'yinai k'teitam v'opanim l'matam v'yamod petach shar b'yit Adonai ha'kmoni u'kvod Elohei Yisrael ha'hem n'umala. Ki ha'chayah asher ra'iti tachar Elohei Yisrael v'har kvar v'yidha ki k'ruvim hem. Okay? So when we read Perek Yud, we're a little patient. Yom Kippur, we go to Perek Yud, and we still remember, you know, we keep putting pieces together. So we come to Perek Yud, what do we find out about the Chayot, looking out about the Chayot?
The Kruvim.
They're Kruvim, right? Right? Pretty clear. We now know something very significant about the Purim. And so the chayot. The chayot are in fact another word for Kruvim. Right? The same things that are said about the chayot in Parak Aleph are said about the Kruvim Parak Yud. In case we don't get it, it's all very clearly. He hafaya, asher ra'iti, hafad Elohei Yisrael in her kvar. Ra'ita, ki Kruvim hema. Right? But Yechezkel himself, there seems to be a progression in terms of understanding what his nevuah is all about. Okay? It's an image, very, very cryptic, but now we begin to see the first clue. Ah, what are the chayot? They're really kruvim. Okay, step four, because at least we've heard of kruvim before, right? Chayot, I don't know what chayot are, right? We have this whole description, but what are chayot? But kruvim, ah, that's some idea what kruvim are. I can't look at the backside. We know kruvim from a lot of contexts, right? Kruvim come up in many places. One of the places that kruvim come up, interestingly enough, and importantly, you know, to our whole topic, is of course in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, right? That's the center of the entire Mishkan or the Mikdash. That's where the Shekhinah, right? The Shekhinah appears to Moshe, speaks to Moshe from Midbar Kruvim. That's the center on top of the Aron. We have the Kruvim. That's the focal point of the Veshachanti, the Tocham in the Mishkan, and later the Mikdash. And so, the idea that the Merkava is a kind of super mobile Mishkan or Mikdash, right, is, of course, the idea that it's very central to, and that which, so to speak, is the platform for the Shina here, is, of course, the Kruvim. This is in the Mishkan for the Mikdash. Okay. Let's go a step further. Let's look at Perek Chafal. Okay, this is where the thought is. Perek Chafal. Okay? Parakabal is a fascinating text. Like, I'm going to take a look close to the Parakabal and watch what happens. Parakabal, we have something which is a little bit unusual in Tanakh, and that is, we know that there are many metaphors and allegories in Tanakh, in the Shalim. Usually we have, you know, a mashal, and then we figure out what the Nimshal is, right? Asher Asher, and then we have to get familiar with the Mepharshim. What is it, a Mashal too? But here we have the Mashal and the Nimshal in the Perek, point by point by point. Because when Hashem gives Yechezkel the Mashal, Yechezkel protests and says, don't make me tell them this crazy, you know, Mashal. They're going to laugh at me. Tell it to me straight. Let me tell it to them straight. And Hashem complies and says, okay, we'll do it not in poetry, but in prose. And so we have both versions, right? We can match them up and put them side by side. And look at what happens. So he drives an eye rather more. Ben Adam, Kim Panecha Derek Teimana, Vahatesh El Darom, Vinave El Yar Hasader Negev. So he's told to make speeches towards the forest of the south. Now, that's obviously a mashal, right? And he goes on to say, Yamarta li ar negev, Shemad barbanai, komad elohim, hinani me tzitba, eish va'achlama, kol eith las, kol eith yavesh, lo tefeh la hebet shal hebet, v'nitiruba, kol tamim yinegev tafon. Right? This tremendous fire that's going to consume the forest is going to destroy all the trees, the moist trees, the dry trees, everything is going to be scorched by it. Ra'u kol basar sheni adunai v'yartia. Lo tefeh, everyone will see that this is fire and it will not go out. Va'amar, ahadunai lehim. So Yechezkel protests and says, Kema omrimli halomim mashal mishalemu. Right? People are saying about me that I'm telling them these crazy fables like this. They're going to laugh at me. Yeah, I'm all these crazy prophets in the beginning. Yechezkel's supposed to do these bizarre things, right? And Yechezkel, Yechezkel protests. It's not the first time he protests. Come on, let me say something straight. And so, look how Pasuk Vav parallels Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Zion, Pasuk Bet, etc. By Yifar Adonai Eli Lemor. Right? The same Pasuk as Pasuk Aleph. Take two, so to speak. Ben Adam. Okay, compare Zion and Bet for a moment. Ben Adam. Kim Panecha El Yerushalayim. Vahateh El Mikdashim. Vinavei El Admat Yisrael. I see that? Instead of the south, we're talking about Yishalai, instead of the forest, we're talking about the Mikdash and so on and so forth. Yamar Kalanat Yisrael Kamar Dunai, Hinani Elechabot Seiti Chardini Ta'ara. Okay, I'm going to take my sword out of the sheath. Bichratini meich tzadik v'rasha. Okay, tzadik v'rasha is the kol eitz lafi avesh. What is the cherev? What is the cherev equal? The eitz, right? The cherev is the fire, right? The sword that God takes out for the korban, that is the fire in the first half, in the mashal. So, eitz is a mashal for what? For cherev. Okay, good. Now, so I'm going to tell you that the Aish in Tarek Aleph is really what? It's really Chereb. Now, you might legitimately object and say, wait, not so fast. You can't just do that. Why? Why might you object to this? Hey, well, just because Aish in Tarek Aleph is a Chereb, who says that Tarek Aleph is a Chereb? Hey, so you said so. But it is a bit of a jump, right? So I'll show you that there's a little bit of basis for saying this. Ready? Let's go a step further. In case you're not sure, we're talking about the same fire. I mean, not literally. But in case you think that there's no connection, take a look. By heat bars and I let it more. Then I've done. In a day, by Mark, the Karmaz and I, and more, Chereb, who chada, begam, meruta. Speak to the sword of this previous divorce, right? And say to it, sword, you are sharpened, uchada, right? Sharp, uchada, begam, miruta, and you are polished, you're shined. Okay, there's a better word for it that always would use me, burnished, or something like that, whatever. Pasuk tefa, so self-shine, okay? Let's polish your shine. Why? Pasuk tefa, look at this. Lema'an tevoach tefa, uchada, it's sharpened in order to slaughter. Lema'an teyeva barach murata. Oh, now, see the Shevet name, Benimo, Lesed Kol Eitz. In other words, L'man Heyeva Barak Marata, it is shined, it's polished. Why? So it should have what? Barak. Now, here it means spark, which means that it should shine, it should sparkle. Right? We say it should sparkle. Spark should come out of it. Not literally spark, but so it should have Barak. Why is that significant? What do we know about the H in Parak Aleph? And then the H, you'll say, Barak. And at this point, Stephen was told that the Chereb in Parak Aleph, right, is supposed to have Barak coming out of it. But this Chereb is represented by the H. So at this point, I'm rather sure that the H of Parak Aleph and the H of Parak Aleph are, you know, the same image. Everyone hear that? That makes sense? So this, yeah, but first hand here, this is pretty compelling. So at this point, after we turn from I say, okay, now you have a chayot left from them, the surrounded by this ace, which is really a chereb. Okay, let's go a step further, because that's not the end of Parak Kabbalah. Pasuk Kabbalah. He's afati, he's still speaking the sword. He's still speaking to the sword. He says to the sword, keep akati, hey mini, hey simi, asmili, anapanayak muado. He speaks to the sword, he says, you're going right, you're going left, which way are you going, which way are you facing? What's the sword doing? He's turning, okay, he's turning, he's twisting. He's looking at a good Hebrew word for this, a good biblical word for this. He's doing what? What? He made a good biblical word. Okay. I have a different biblical word. I'm reading that biblical word because it comes from the Bible. The cherub is mitapeka. Okay? I think that's the word that the Torah uses in describing a sword that is turning mitapeka. Anyone remember the passage where that description of the sword is from? Very good. Okay. And let's take a look at this pasuk because it's rather interesting. Okay. By Hashem. Here's the end of Parak Gimel of Bereishis, if you want to look. The end of Parak Gimel. After Adam and Chava are sent out to Gan Eden, right, let's say by Hashem, and Pasru Ven, the Ed, Lahad, Haferet, Hamit HaPachet. Okay? Now let's take a look for a moment at this. Okay? At the end of Parak Gimel. Vayashkein, by the way, Vayashkein comes from the same source as Mishkan, if I point out by the Kanaki and other Mepharshim. Vayashkein, and really that's all right, Vayashkein et Hakruvim, okay? Vayashkein et Hakruvim, okay, everyone agree? Vayashkein et Hakruvim, that Lahat, what does Lahat mean? Fire. This is the fire of the turning sword. Okay? What do we have over here? We have the Chayot, but they're really Kruvim. What surrounds the Kruvim? This fire, right? This fire, Eish, which is another word for Lahat. This Eish, which is really a turning sword, right? A Chayot and a Kapat. Okay? The Kruvim slash Chayot in Perek Aleph are accompanied by a Cheret slash Eish, which is Mitzvah. Okay, and when you put all the pieces together, from Aleph, Yud, from Aleph, right, and you put it together with, now let's look at the rest of what we have over here. You recognize any of these things over here? Dmut Adam, representing, right, the image of the Kod Hashem. Remember back in Gracia, where Adam was created? That's the Tzal Melekim, the Dmut Elekim, right? Take a look, the Rakia, right? You look at the Dmut Adam, right? Okay? And you look at the Kruvim, and you look at the flaming, turning sword. You begin to see what image emerges here, right? This is the image of expulsion, the galut, right? The expulsion, the exile of man from Gan Eden as a consequence of chet, carried with it, of course, the kruvim are there in order to see to it that we don't get back to the eitz hachayim, right? Because they are the shemor, they are eitz hachayim. So that brings with it the mavet, the onesh of the yom ha'chasam, and then a mot hamut. And these are the two basic aspects throughout the before God, right? Galut, right? Exile, and death. So what we have here in Perek Aleph, when you first look at it, it's like, whoa, there are these chayot with the eish and with the crazy stuff going on, right? You start to read your head, come on, and put the pieces together, okay? You break through, and me and the Mekoma, Perek Aleph doesn't explain all of this. But Hashem the Malkum Afer, you go on to Perek Yud, Perek Kaf Aleph, you put the pieces together, and it starts to become obvious that what we have here is the idea of the expulsion of Adam, the Adam and Chava, and alongside that is the other image that we have, okay, Noah. And who is Noah if not the second Adam, right? Mankind, B'nai Adam, are also known as B'nai Noah, right? Why? Because Noah is the second father of mankind. Right? The Maharal talks about the analogy between the three sons of Noah, the three sons of Adam, but it's honest, right? We start again with Noah, and he's the next father of mankind. It's like everyone comes to Noah, everyone comes to Adam, everyone comes to Adam, everyone comes to Noah. Noah is, again, second. Right? Remember the Mishnah, the parak of Avos, right? Asar Doruk, Adam to Noah, right? That's what's going on here. We have Adam, and then we have Noah. These are the two key images in this parak. And this idea of Adam and Gan Eden is not just Perek Aleph, it's not even just the Korban image in the Sefer, but in fact, it's the key to the whole Sefer. Okay, I'm going to try to do a little bit about that in the coming minutes. Okay, take a deep breath. Got to stage one. Any questions? Okay so far? Everyone with me so far? Did you lose anyone along the way? Okay. What? We're really fast?
Yeah, but we
have like very fast. Okay. We'll figure out the pace as we go on this. Okay. But everyone got it? We're all good? Okay. Please, don't hesitate to ask if the question is not clear. Okay. Can we go to the next level? Next level. Here we go. So the question that always bothers me, about safety assessment. It's a little detail, it's a footnote to what we just did, but I think it's interesting. And this is the cute part for the moment. But I think there's something to it, and you'll have to decide for yourself. Yechezkel has a nickname. Okay, Yechezkel has a nickname throughout the whole sefer. What's his nickname? Beautiful. Okay, that is called Ben Adam. Okay, so we want to look at why it's called Ben Adam. So all kinds of explanations. Because it's such incredible vision, so there he has to remind that he's just human. That's what I was told in, I don't know, high school, whatever. And I have to say, I wasn't blown away by that explanation. But, listen, okay, Kai, you're going to have to strike the jackpot. It could be, but look. But I want to suggest something that I think is Laniyat is no worse than anything else. Just the five things, better or not, but we have to put together a few different pieces. Okay, first of all, please go ahead.
All right, then no question. With the exhaustion of Grand Eden and with Noah, both of those situations became nice, you know, like the exhaustion of Grand Eden and the confinement, like, that's how life became, like they were no longer Grand Eden. With Noah, after the marvel, that's how life was, like they were no longer whatever it was before. And then now with each other in development, but that's not the idea. Like that's still not like how life is. It's still like they're still trying to get back to.
Okay. I would argue that being kicked out of Gan Eden is not the ideal either.
Like I mean, is there like a chance that Rome's gonna go back? Is that?
I would say that there's absolutely not only is there a chance. That's the point. It's not necessarily physically go back to place, but to go back to you know, to try to re-enter Hashem's presence, that's the essence of what the Mikdash is all about. Right? That's why the Kuvim are at the center of the Mikdash, because it's all about, because the Kuvim, what's their mission? They're the guardians of the path back in. The Shmor, Ederech, Eitz HaChayim. They're the guardians of the path. The guards don't just keep people out who don't belong. Guards also usher in people who do belong with. And that's kind of this dual image, right? What happens at Yom Kippur? The Kohen Gadol goes into the Karsh HaKarshim, goes into the place of the Kruvim, right? And there's a tremendous amount to say about that. We can't do everything in one time. We're going to see a little bit of that in a few minutes. That's our show. We'll do what we can. Okay, so, here we go. Back to Ben Adam. Okay, Ben Adam. So, let's go step by step. So, in order to understand this, you have to look for a moment. Yechezkel Parak Chafet. Okay, Yechezkel Chafet is in the last box on the second side, if you want to look there, along with Yechezkel Chafet, Kol Kavod. I took you to death, and I'll give you death and your towel for a moment. And take a look. Ben Adam. Sakina Amelah Sor. Yamar Kavod. He was told that the king of Sor, who is the whole parak, has a problem. He feels that he's gone. Okay, which is of course the issue with my other Mitzvah, right? And we need to tell him that they come around, right? I just almost word for word this time. But in case it wasn't absolutely clear, right? In case you weren't convinced that there's something going on with Gan Eden and Adam and Sefer from Parak Aleph, watch what comes next. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Be Eden Gan Elohim Hayita. Is that clear enough? So Yechezkel, the name of Hashem, is saying this to the king of Sor. Do you hear that? Now look, Be Eden Gan Elohim Hayita. Because you weren't Gan Eden. I think that's pretty clear. Pretty straightforward. Look at the precious stones that surround it, that serve the canopy for Adam / the king of Sor. Right? The king of Sor is the Mishal, the Mashal of Adam. That is Adam HaRishon. What are the stones? Odem, Pitzah, V'yalom, Tarshish, Shom, V'yashvei, Sakir, Nofech, Uvareket, V'zaham, Melechet Tetach and Kvech Havach Yom Yivrach Hanan. Recognize that list? This is the stones of the Kohen Gadol, right? The stones of the Kohen Gadol. And we have here, this is the source, one of the main sources, the main source for an idea that runs throughout Chazal and many Mepharshim, that the image of the Kohen, right, and particularly the Kohen Gadol, but there is a distinction between the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Gadol. Again, it's a different discussion, but not for now. But to blur that distinction for a moment, or for Kaili's, but the idea that Chazal say, the Midrash is quoted by Rabbeinu B'chai, the Parashat on Bereishit, the Rabbeinu B'chai that's the Talmud of the Ramban, and there are Talmud of the Ramban. So Ramban on Bereishit quotes a Midrash, that's a long example, it says basically that when it says that Hashem kicked Adam and Chava out of Gan Eden, He closed them in what? What did He close them in? Now they clothed themselves in fig leaves. But what did Hashem clothe them in? What's it called? Well, remember, if you look, I only give open book test. What did Hashem clothe them in? Where does it say? What have the pasuk? And then where the words of the pasuk? Okay, katnos or. Make katnos or. I'm sorry, you said I didn't hear it. Katnos or. Okay? What's the singular? Katnos is plural because it was Adam and Chava. What's the singular? Ketonet. Okay, this is the origin of the ketonet. Where do we know the ketonet from? The basic garment of the kohen, right? The basic garment of the kohen is the ketonet, right? The midrash Tanhuma on Vayakol Pekude says that the mishkan is a kind of a microcosm, and you have everything in Masturbation is parallel to the mishkan. What about Adam? What's the parallel to Adam? Says the midrash. The parallel is the Kohen, right? What's the basic garment of the Kohen? The Ketonet, right? And the Ketonet is such a beautiful symbol. Think about this for a moment. I want to give you a mashal for a moment. What? Yes, let's add this a little bit, okay? Imagine the following scene, okay? Picture that I'm in the kitchen talking on the phone. In the middle of an important and, you know, demanding phone call where I'm like, I'm really, you know, engrossed in the phone call, discussing something very important, and my 2-year-old, or 4-year-old, the case may be, because they're both capable of this, but one of them imagines we'll pick on Shaw. She's a real troublemaker. Shaw is my 4-year-old, she's a real troublemaker. So, Shaw is in the kitchen, and the oven's going, and I'm saying, I'm trying to talk on the phone, and I see Shaw is inching towards the oven, because there's something really good in the oven, probably a cake, right? And she has been very curious, my little Shaw. So anyhow, Shaw is inching her way towards the oven. I go, Shaw, get away from the oven, you're going to get burnt. So she moves away. I get back on the phone, okay, continuing. Again, I see she's getting closer and closer, like, Shaw, get away from the oven, I pull her away. A few minutes later, I'm engrossed in the phone call, and suddenly I hear, ah! Right? Shaw was burnt. I go over to Shaw, and what do you say here, right? Imagine! I take her, and I go, you stupid kid! I told you not to do it! That's it, deal with it, right? That's what a parent does, right? What do you do? Take your phone, poor Shaw, we give her a kiss, and you put on bandages, that cures everything in the relationship. And it gets more complicated. So sick. And after you give her the band-aid, and you know, maybe even she wants that cream, it's part of whatever it is, and give her and get all salt. And I say, oh, that's why you don't catch that up, right? But I don't say it's your time to deal with it, right? Because I want to, you know. So even though I told her not to do it, I told her not to do it, and she did it, it's her fault that she's burnt. Why do Adam and Chava need cutting out the door? Why do they need cutting out the door? They didn't need cutting out the door before, why do they need it now? Because they ate from the eight hadas, right? Now, did Hashem tell them don't eat from the eight hadas, right? You call eight hadas, you call the eight hadas, you call the eight hadas, and they ate from the eight hadas, and now they have problems, because they're aware that they're naked, they're embarrassed of being naked. So, deal with it. You know, you like to take leaves of bread, not so go shopping, whatever, I don't know. You have to do it, you deal with it. No, but Hashem says no. He makes them cut those oars. What does the ketonet symbolize? That even after the faith, Hashem still loves us, Hashem still cares about us. Hashem hasn't given up on us. And that's really very much the role of the Kohen, right? That to bring about the carbon, the kapara, etc. To relate that back to even our faith is a relationship with Hashem. And we're still trying to get it back into Hashem's presence, and then etc. That's the Kohen, right? That's the Kohen. So watch what happens. We're told when Adam and Chava came down, they gave them the Ketonet, so Chazal say, mentioned before, that Hashem clothed them in Big Day Kahuna Gdola. Why Big Day Kahuna Gdola? Very simple. It comes from Yechezkel Perek Chafet. Right? It comes from Yechezkel Perek Chafet. It's a little more complex than that, but again, that's not our time. But that's the basic idea. Let's go a step further. We know one major by example fact about Yechezkel. Hey, I'm not the most professional one. I said, Cohen is a friend. Nothing here. Okay. Anyhow, I messed up on a proposal. Right. You know, one thing about Yechezkel, it's going to be a pop question, but it can't be now, so whatever. He's a Cohen, right? We're told that he's a Cohen. But we're not told a lot about him on a personal level. We're basically told about him, but we're told that he was a Cohen. So, Yechezkel is a Cohen. Okay? Yechezkel is a Cohen. And a Kohen, right, a Kohen is in the image of Adam Harisha, right? The Kohen represents Adam Harisha. Now watch what happens. Fascinating thing. Let's go towards the top of the page, or back to Yechezkel Perachet, as the case may be, and let's look at what happens. Yechezkel Perachet.
Is it regular point
entering that over the Kohen? Yes, but not the Abana, because there is a difference. But the four garments are the same, and then there's additional four for Kohen garments. Yes.
So it comes from
Nachdor, the Minishal, the Dorot, the Mashal. It's a Minishal. Adam Harishon is the Mashal. Right? The King of Tor is being compared to Adam Harishon. Just like Adam Harishon thought that he was God, right? And he thinks that, you know, he can use the God and decide what's over, etc. So too, the King of Tor thinks that he's God. And it goes on to describe that in the text. I'm not reading the whole thing, but right this moment. Okay, let's continue. So, paragraph 10. Vahi bashanah shishit, vashishi b'chamishah l'chodesh, miyoshev b'vei ti. Right, he's sitting at home. Shizikne yudai yishim l'fanayim. Atipol alai shan, yad atanayim. Pasuk 10. Vareh, v'nei d'mut k'marei eish, v'marei ma'navu mata eish, v'marei m'mala k'marei zohar k'ena chashmalah. You recognize that image? Right? Tergal, right? He sees, again, the Master Merkava. Pasuk Yemul. Look at Pasuk Yemul. Vayishlach Havnit Yad. It sends out the form of a hand. Vayikacheni B'tzitzit Roshi. What's B'tzitzit Roshi?
The
my hair, right? Exactly. The string, literally the strings of my head. So he means my hair, right? Grabbed him by the hair. Vakisauti ruach, and this ruach lifts him up, between earth and Yerushalayim, between heaven and earth, between earth and heaven. Okay, vatavei oti Yerushalayim, he brought Yerushalayim, meaning Yechezkel, he brought Yerushalayim, b'maraot Elohim, el petach shar hapimi atonet ha'ona, asher sham moshat femo akinam kene. He brought Yerushalayim, b'maraot Elohim. Simple meaning, but he brought b'maraot Elohim. He's not brought there physically. It's a vision, it's a nevuah, right? He sees himself brought to Shalim, he's not literally brought to Shalim. That's one way of reading it, but there's another way we can interpret it, which is not to the negation of the other possibility, right? Not excluding the other possibility, but it complements in a beautiful way. We could say that Yechezkel is transported to Mar'oz Elohim in a different sense. Because think about it for a moment. Picture one of those old classic UFO movies. Let's say, you know, I'm going to date myself tremendously. You know, I think this one's so old that, you know, E.T. or, you know, something like that. That's a big UFO, okay? And it comes down, and it's just good for nothing comfortable. I'm saying just to get the wheels turning a little bit. You see the ship descend, this big mechanical hand comes out, grabs you by the hair, you're pulled off the ground, sucked off the ground, into the air. Now what's going to be the next thing? What happens next?
They get back to you.
Something else happens first. their imagination. Before we get to the good part, what else? Look at the next scene. You'll get pulled into the ship. No, there's a next day. Can we keep the good part? If you look, it's so fascinating, right? Yechezkel's standing, he sees the Merkabah, this hand comes down, the Ruach picks him up off the ground to where the Merkabah is essentially, right here, and he's brought to Yerushalayim in Mar'oz Elokim. What's Mar'oz Elokim? You could say it means in a Nevuah, but you could also say something else. What else does Mar'oz Elokim refer to?
Isn't that what it's called in Perkabah?
First parent, right? First parent, first pasuk. Niftachu hashamayim va'er'er. What do you see? Mar'ot Elokim. And what is Mar'ot Elokim in Parak Aleph? What does it refer to? First the Merkabah. The Merkabah, again, it's not called Merkabah, but that's the description of what it is, right? The type of Merkabah with these ofanim, ofan, b'toch ofan, this whole thing. And it's a kind of, so what is a Merkabah? Merkabah is a kind of transportation, right? It's a mode of transportation. If Yechezkel is brought to Yerushalayim, the Mar'ot Elokim in Parak Bet, and in Parak Aleph, we read already that Mar'ot Elokim is the way it's described in Merkabah. Does it make sense that Yechezkel is transported to Yerushalayim in the Merkabah? Yes. Which one? About what Mar'oz Elokim is for?
Yeah.
Parak Aleph, what's about?
No, but what was it? Where is it? The second Greek word is the
Sankara. Ah, Parak Chet, Tatsut Gimel.
Thank you.
No problem. Okay. So, if this is correct, yes.
The
absolutely. Yeah, I'm not saying that these two explanations contradict at all.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is a prophetic vision. Fine. But I'm saying, but what is he seeing happen? Transport to Shalim to Mar'oz Elokim may not only mean that he sees this happen, but that he is transported in the Mar'oz Elokim, which is a technical term from Parakalos, which refers to something specific. And if that's the case, it means that Yechezkel is not only an observer of the Merkabah, he's also a participant. He's also part of the Merkabah to a certain degree. And if Yechezkel is part of the Merkabah, and Yechezkel is a Kohen is in the image of Adam, okay? And what is the apex of the Merkabah? This huge Dumut Adam, right? So isn't it possible, think about this for a moment, if you see two people, and they look similar, they have the same basic Dumut, but one is very big, and one is much littler. What might we say about those two? Okay, we have these two people look like one big one and one little one. Can you not assume what we might assume about them? That they're what? Father and son. Hence, what is Yechezkel referred to as? Okay. That's the suggestion. Okay? Can chew on that. Okay. But I want to show you a basis for it. Ready? I want to show you a basis for that. Because don't hide your bed, Blake. Okay. Take a deep breath.
I don't know how to write that.
I can stop writing.
Yeah, no, yeah. Thanks,
Peter Cornell. We'll see you on the website before you know it. Don't worry. So I have to tell you that this will be your chance to breathe, okay? We'll take a break for a quick story. A long time ago, back many, many lifetimes ago. So we were living in Washington Heights, right near YU, and I've lived there for about 13 years. And at that time, it was which must have been about 15 years ago. At that point, I barely just learned how to use computers, which sounds very bad, but like, no one knew how to use computers in those days. This is because there were no laptops in those days. You understand? It's only those, you know, like, the desktops were fairly new. And they had the first Pentiums in existence. So this is a long time ago. And 15 years ago, there I am. And throughout the whole year, I've been teaching and working on and really spent a lot of time in Pacific Test. And one thing I spent time on was, as I just learned how to use a computer, and this was in Hebrew yet, so it even worked, I was typing up all my notes on all the chiddushim I had on Pesach Yechezkel, little by little, throughout the whole year, one keystroke at a time. And I went to that computer, I had it on a file, but back in those days, on Zygate, so I had it on a floppy. Came the end of the year, I take the floppy, put it in my briefcase, go home with my family, and read it up through Parak Mem, like the first four yet, before you attack them. My wife took my briefcase out of the car in Washington Heights, put it down next to the car as we were unpacking the And about 8 hours later, I said, Ula, do you know where my briefcase is? I can't seem to find it. And she ran out of the house. She ran out of the house. She was looking through garbage pails. And now I was like, So this is very upsetting. I say at least. I've gone over it since then. But I went back and looked at this big bin of things that were thrown out from the computer room and everything, because I had my computer, I had all the computer room, and so when I pulled out pages of the contract answer, I was able to reconstruct and get a hard copy. I still don't have it on the computer, but I had it in a hard copy, so at least I was able to get back almost all of it. So if you ever see, a person in Tesco in Spanish, you'll know. That's what happened. But to Ezra Hashem, you know, a little bit down the road, it'll be all written up, and you know, you can just get it and not worry about writing. Okay, you want to sit back, enjoy, listen, and learn. Okay. Can you hear?
I'm still
I know. Sorry. Funny story. Okay, here we go. Now, Baruch Hashem, I was able to. I also given out to a lot of other teachers, you know, copies of the notes, and so I was able to reconstruct like most of it. And Baruch Hashem, one day, you know, get to heaven. But meanwhile, here we go. I wanted to show you something that I think is a little bit of a support. For just suggest. And brings together beautifully all these things. Okay? Ready? Here we go. So when I thought about this, and it hit me like I had this idea about why he called Ben Adam, and here he is with Adam, and he's with Noah, and wow, there are particular Tehillim that we all know that sum this up so beautifully. Okay? And here we go. Tehillim Perek Lamza. Tehillim Lamza. It describes people. People who are plotting evil all the time. Okay, which is exactly what it describes about Zohar HaMavo. It will continue. Adonai v'ashamayim chaskecha emorasa ad shechakim. And here's the part I want to focus on. You recognize the psukim immediately, I'm sure, and listen carefully to these psukim. Tzidkatcha keharei'el mishpatecha tehom rabah adam u'behema toshia Adonai. Tzidkatcha keharei'el. And remember what happens in the story of the Marvel, right? Hashem, when he has rachamim on mankind, on Noah, on the animals of the Teva comes to rest where? On the high mountains, on Har Ararat, right? Tizkatah kehar re'er. Mishpatecha, God's judgment, tehom rabah, right? Remember, nitzachu, my notes, tehom rabah, right? The depths open up, the water comes out, you have the marvel. Adam uvehima, what happens with the Teva? Adam uvehima, Toshia Hashem. Mayakar hastacha lohim, right? How precious is your chesed, God. And look at the next phrase. Uvnei Adam, Bnei Adam is the plural of what? Ben Adam, okay? Bnei Adam, Uvnei Adam, Betzel kinafefa yachasayun. Look at this beautiful image, right? What happens in the Merkaba? Right, Yechezkel describes, right, like a heart fire, and he sees that we have this marvel taking place, this horror taking place, but where is Yechezkel? He's in the, he is sheltered by the wing of God's Merkava, right? Uvitzel kinasecha, uvnei Adam, who's Bnei Adam, right? The singular of Bnei Adam is Ben Adam, Yechezkel, right? Uvitzel kinasecha, remember the Knafayim? Right, of the Merkava, similarly, who else is sheltered by God during this process? The other Ben Adam, right, who is the second Adam? That's Noah. Now, in case you think that's weird, I guess from take a look. Bereishit Rabba, it's not where I got it from, but this is, I think, confirms it. So, who did Barmaimon Hatakai ben Noah? Amar Kash Baruch Hu, Saka Shasiti of Noah Fateva, Lord Siti Mo Ella Im Harare El, Shanamar, Batana Fateva, Bahorish Hashvi, Al Hare Amarat, Mishpatecha Tahom Rabah, Yisur Shebet El Doro, Lord Vaki Alekhen, Elami Tahom Rabah, Shanamar, Nizkurum, I know Tahom Rabah. Because the heart you love, the low by those cartoons, Ella low, Rafal Shiyeshima, Bateva, Hadal, the fifth, that's good in the dog, that's called Hea, that's Adam Ubehima, Toshia Hashem. Okay? Moshe Chazal as well say that these two kin are remnants to the story of Noah and the marble. If we take Bnei Adam, the plural, one of the Ben Adam is clearly Noah, the other Ben Adam is Yechezkel. And we have exactly, I think, the Fatima here, right, these people who are in the image of Adam. I'd like to go just one step further. Okay? I'm going up to it. One step further. A little step. Just want to say a word about the whole thing. Yechezkel consists of three major stages of faith. The first third, I don't mean precisely numerically, but the first third is all korban, tolcha, right? That's the first third. And we saw a sampling of that tonight, right? The Masa Merkava, the political. The second segment is the Nevuot to the other nations, the Umot Ha'olam, specifically enemies of Bnei Israel. Okay, surround the enemies of Bnei Israel. People who either are participants in the Korban or are accomplices in the Korban or at least have reason to kind of snicker when Bnei Israel suffers the Korban. Again, without going through the whole list of the nations and why and what, not right this moment, but in any case, that's the middle segment. In the first segment, we saw how the Demut of the story of Adam and Chava and the expulsion from Gan Eden, the angels going the way back in so that we are better and have the death and destruction. That's the first third. The second third, that image is used again, as we saw in Parakafet, right? But now it's not used against the Bnei Israel, but that's kind of neutralized. It's used against these other nations, just the enemies of the Bnei Israel. So we go kind of from the negative to the neutral. And now look at the last third. The last third is all of you. The last third is all Geula. It's all Nechama. And if you look at what it says, it's so beautiful. One sample. Perek Lamed Vav. Okay, the very fine machine. Perek Lamed Vav, thank you, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Klamad Nehu Him. ביום תאריאס להם לקרוא אבנותיכם, והושבתי את תארים ונבנו החרבות. בארץ הנשמה תאבי, תחת אשר הייתה שממה לעיני כל עוברה. Instead of every passerby seeing how desolate the land is, it will be worked again. It will flourish again. Ba'amru, and they will say, Ha'aret ha'lezu ha'neshama, this desolate land, ha'ita kikan eden. Ba'arim ha'charavot ha'neshamot ha'nerasot b'tzirot yashav. And then people, who where before people would pass by, and they would comment, and we have many historical records of this happening over the last several millennia. We have the descriptions, right, famous descriptions of people who traveled through the Holy Land and took a look and said, the more holy it is, the more desolate it is, has said that we see hardly anyone here, nothing fills up, everything is in ruins, everything is a desert and is brown, and now we see just the opposite. Va'amru ha'aretz ha'lezu ha'neshama ha'ita k'gan Eden. Now it's like Gan Eden. And the same image of Gan Eden that was used in the negative in the first third, in a more neutral way in the middle section, it becomes the model of the positive. In the third section, as we talk about Gan Eden in the sense of the pristine Gan Eden, the Gan Eden of before the Chet, the Gan Eden when Adam and Chava are first placed there with all of the infinite potential that encompasses. I think that what we see here is how this image of Gan Eden and Adam and Chava is used as kind of the central thread that runs through the entire Sefer, and as it goes through the various stages, from 1 to 2 to 3, it takes on a different meaning, it takes on a different tone, different aspects of it that's used, but consistently, it is this image that's used throughout. So, as per the title on the top, we saw a little bit about the Sefer Yechezkel, a little bit about hopefully some keys and some basic ideas and images that can help us to unlock the entire Sefer. And really, I think that one were to read through the entire Sefer, you'd see that there's so much that this helps us to understand. Since we've gone through, I guess it's for tonight, if it's okay with you, we'll stop at this point. We'll continue Ezra Hashem on Sunday night, and we'll continue with another aspect, several other aspects of Sefer Yechezkel in the general context of the Nevuah of Korban and Ge'ulah. For tonight, at least we start with Tovah and got to see a little bit of what Sefer Yechezkel is about, and hopefully have a little bit of more of an understanding of what that very enigmatic first chapter is about, what Mashiach Merkava is about. And I think I kept my promise we didn't do anything mystical, esoteric, usher. We just looked at the simple shot of what the Shkutim are saying from the perspective of the rest of the Sefer and to a certain degree the rest of the Tanakh. Okay. So, good night and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Any questions? Feel free.